Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Lucia Malonic, Bruce Alpert, Jill Robbins, Christopher Jones Cruz, and Brian Lynn. Later, Anne Ball will have this week's Science in the News report. But first, here is Lucia Malonic.
A private group has recognized a California man who helps poor people and immigrant families. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation announced that Jose Quiñones is receiving one of its genius grants. He was one of 23 people to get recognized. Quiñones was born in Mexico, but moved to the United States as a boy. Today, he is a financial service innovator. Quiñones set up a not-for-profit organization called the Mission Asset Fund. Its job is to create a fair financial marketplace for hard-working families. Borrowing money is a big step for people who want to start a business. Quiñones says his goal is to make loans available to individuals who have limited finances. He said about 7% of Americans do not have a bank account and do not show up on the credit rating system. Without a credit history, it is difficult for them to borrow money, get a job, or start a business. Quiñones is using money lending traditions from Latin America, Asia, and Africa to help those in need. He organized lending circles, where groups of neighbors and others combine their money to make small loans. Each individual has to attend a final education class and persuade others in the lending circle to repay the money. Quiñones says more than 99% of the loans are repaid. He and the Mission Asset Fund follow a borrowing and repayment activity. They report results to major credit rating agencies. This information gives the individual a proven repayment history. A good credit history makes banks more willing to make loans to these clients in the future. Jose Quiñones's work with the fund and minorities in San Francisco helped him earn a MacArthur Fellowship. A number of other organizations are now using Mission Asset Fund as a guide to setting up similar programs in other cities. MacArthur Fellows are chosen for their creativity, past successes, and potential. They get $625,000 over 5 years in an effort to give them the financial freedom to follow through on their projects. The MacArthur Foundation is one of the largest private foundations in the United States. Its website says the group supports creative people, effective institutions, and influential networks, building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. The foundation also honored a number of people for their work in other areas. This year's class of MacArthur Fellows include a human rights lawyer, an expert on languages, a microbiologist, computer scientists, and a poet. I'm Lucia Malonig.
Democrat Tim Kaine and Republican Mike Pence are running for vice president. They will compete in a televised debate Tuesday night. Vice president is a position that has long been the object of jokes because many saw it as an unimportant job. The vice presidency has grown in importance. Recent vice presidents have been asked to do much more than represent the United States at funerals. But for many years, even those who held the office said they had little to do.
John Adams was the first U.S. vice president, serving under George Washington. He said the vice presidency was the most insignificant office ever. Thomas Marshall served as vice president from 1913 to 1921. He joked, "Once there were two brothers. One ran away to sea. The other was elected vice president of the United States, and nothing was heard of either of them again." Walter Mondale, who was Jimmy Carter's vice president from 1977 to 1981, said that over most of America's history, the vice president has been standby equipment. By standby, he meant that the vice president stands by, ready to become president if the president dies or gives up the office. That has happened 9 times, 8 because of the death of the president, and once when the president gave up the office. The last 2 vice presidents to take over the presidency were Lyndon Johnson and Gerald Ford. Johnson took the oath of office after President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in 1963. Ford replaced President Richard Nixon after he resigned in 1974 as Congress investigated a scandal known as Watergate. Joel Goldstein is a law professor at the University of St. Louis in the state of Missouri. He is considered one of the top experts on the vice presidency.
He said the vice presidency was long connected to representing the United States at funerals and casting the deciding vote in the Senate when a vote was tied. But that changed, beginning with Richard Nixon, who served as vice president for Dwight Eisenhower in the 1950s. Eisenhower sent Nixon to meet with foreign leaders, Goldstein said. A Nixon visit to the Soviet Union led to a debate with Russian Premier Nikita Khrushchev over which is better, capitalism or communism. Nixon, a Republican, went on to run and lose the presidential election to Democrat John Kennedy in 1960. 8 years later, Nixon won the presidency, defeating another vice president, Democrat Hubert Humphrey.
Goldstein said Walter Mondale expanded the importance of the vice presidency. He acted as an important advisor to President Jimmy Carter from 1977 to 1981. Mondale, a Democrat, started a tradition that future administrations copied. He started weekly lunches between the president and vice president to discuss top issues, Goldstein said. George H.W. Bush served as Ronald Reagan's vice president. He helped move Reagan's agenda through Congress, Goldstein said. Bush also helped persuade Reagan to negotiate nuclear weapon reduction with Russian President Mikhail Gorbachev. Bush, a Republican, won the presidency over Democrat Michael Dukakis in 1988. From 2001 to 2009, Dick Cheney served as vice president to President George W. Bush. George W. Bush is a Republican, like his father, George H. W. Bush. Reuters said Cheney played a big part in the Bush administration's decision to invade Iraq. George H. W. Bush, in a book, said that Cheney pushed too hard for war. Current Vice President Joe Biden has also been a top advisor to President Barack Obama. Biden said he attends almost every meeting with Obama at his request. He has led White House efforts to pass gun control bills and to fight cancer. One of the finest vice presidents in history is what Obama said of Biden on CBS television.
People do not vote directly for the vice president. They vote for what is called a ticket. On November 8th, voters will choose between the Republican ticket of presidential candidate Donald Trump and vice presidential candidate Mike Pence, and the Democratic ticket of Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine. At Tuesday night's debate, Pence and Kaine are likely to spend a good deal of the 90-minute debate talking about their partner on the ticket. They will explain why their running mate would make a good president and why the other presidential candidate would not. Goldstein, the University of St. Louis expert, said vice presidential debates generally get less attention than the three debates between the major presidential candidates. But there was one big exception. The 2008 vice presidential debate between Democrat Joe Biden and Republican Sarah Palin drew 70 million viewers. That is more than the number of people who watched the first presidential debate between Barack Obama and John McCain. I'm Bruce Alpert.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
NATO commanders are calling on Western nations to expand efforts against the information war being spread by opponents of the West. The commanders warn that countries like Russia are using the free press in democratic countries to spread disinformation. The term hybrid warfare is often used to describe the deployment of disinformation and military power at the same time. An example is the Russian takeover of Crimea from Ukraine in 2014. 2 years ago, gunmen launched raids on Ukrainian military bases in the area. At first, the Russian government denied the gunman belonged to the Russian military. Yet similar unidentified armed groups appeared in eastern Ukraine a few weeks later. That conflict between Russia-supported rebels and the Ukrainian military is continuing. Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko spoke recently to the United Nations General Assembly. He said hybrid warfare is being used against the whole Western world.
Political pressure, blatant propaganda, interference with the electoral process, economic coercion, secret subversive and military operation, cyber attack, misuse of diplomatic measures.
Janice Sartz is the director of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization's STRATCOM Center of Excellence. She said the West is playing catch-up to the disinformation campaigns. Representatives of Western countries recently met to discuss the growing influence of Russian state media, including its 24-hour Russia Today, or RT. The television station is often accused of broadcasting propaganda for Russia. Edward Lucas works for The Economist magazine. He says TV stations like RT should not be considered journalism. He says Russia lies about events. He says Western media prioritizes fairness over truth. Lucas says the West must be more active on social media.
There's a real problem with comment fields and with fake social media accounts, particularly on Twitter. The Russians are putting lots and lots of money into creating tens of thousands of trolls.
NATO officials said Russia believes control of information is an important part of its conflict planning. They said Western nations use separate public relations teams to provide information during conflicts. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Machines are now doing many jobs usually performed by people. One new invention is a machine that operates cars and other vehicles in parking garages. Another kind of robot can transport food or medicine in some hospitals. Robots are now used at a new parking garage in West Hollywood, California. Drivers drop off their vehicles in front of the building, and the robots take over from there. The vehicles are lifted and transported by large machines controlled by computers. The computers record the exact measurements of the automobile and take it to the best available space. The robots can leave cars within centimeters of each other without any mistakes. Car owner Johnny D'Agostino said he feels good knowing that a machine is moving his vehicle.
I take my keys. I don't got to worry about a valet driving my car. I don't got to worry about somebody scratching my car.
When people return to the garage, they use a ticket to pay for the safe return of the vehicle. The robot then retrieves the car and returns it to the driver. The 200-car parking lot is the first of its kind in West Hollywood. The city's mayor, Lauren Meister, says the system is easy to use and reduces air pollution.
You don't have people going and parking their own cars, so the ventilation system is different, and we are literally saving hundreds and hundreds of trees.
City officials say the garage cost about $18 million. This is only a little higher than the usual price, since the building does not need extended lighting systems or walkways for humans to use. Another kind of robot is being used to carry food and medicine in some hospitals and retirement homes. The automated carriers make deliveries to let workers spend more time with patients. The robotic go-kart can recognize people and equipment and move around them to reach its target. Marcus Liebhart helped develop the robot.
We drive through the hallways, and during that phase, the robot generates a map. Once the robot learned the map, it is able to navigate by itself.
The go-kart can operate alone or be used in a group of robots that communicate with each other. Liebhart said the robot is good at recognizing possible hazards and avoiding them.
So if people jump in its way, kids jumping around the robot, then the robot will stop in time to avoid any collision. And it will also, if possible, replan its route, move around people.
The South Korean manufacturer, Yujin, says the go-kart is good at performing the same activity over and over again. So it hopes the robots will be used in other medical settings in the future. I'm Brian Lin.
Covers nearly 29 million square kilometers of this planet beneath the sea? The answer is seamounts. Seamounts are mountains, usually volcanoes, that rise up from the seafloor. Some of the volcanoes are ancient, some are still active, but they are hard to find because they do not reach the surface of the water. Scientists say seamounts cover more of the Earth's area than deserts, tundra, or any other land-based habitats. Marine life gathers at seamounts because they carry nutrient-rich water upward from the sea floor. In September, a group of scientists set out to explore Cook Seamount. It rises almost 4,000 meters from the Pacific Ocean floor, about 160 kilometers off the island of Hawaii. Humans have never seen it up close before. The Associated Press went with the scientists and provided exclusive images and information about this seamount and the marine life around it.
I-65 surface, you're going in.
Roger, going in.
Three people went in a submarine down to over 900 meters below the ocean's surface to the top of the seamount. As the blue waters became darker, underwater creatures that glow by chemically creating their own light, began to swim past the submarine. The scientists dove below the level where sunlight can reach. They spotted some wonders, like a rare octopus with big fins that look like elephant ears. One even changed colors as it swam by the submarine. The scientists also found several kinds of deep-sea corals on the seamount's sides. These included a possible new species of violet-colored coral they named Purple Haze. Conservation International and the University of Hawaii worked together for the trip to Cook Seamount. Greg Stone is the lead scientist with Conservation International. He spoke to AP News Service on the ship.
This three-day expedition is the start of an effort to survey seamounts throughout the Pacific Ocean over the next 5 years. And we hope to study a total of 50 seamounts.
He said, humans know very little about seamounts, but they are a key part of what drives the ocean. Stone said he wants to find out what is living on the seamounts and how they support ocean life.
From that, we will understand ocean health, and ocean health relates directly to human health.
M. Sanjian is Executive Vice President of Conservation International. He told AP that there are 10,000, maybe 100,000 seamounts across the world's oceans. He called them hot spots for marine diversity. And because they have not been explored, he expects that they will see things new to science when they get there. Sonia Rowley is a researcher at the University of Hawaii who is taking part in the project. She will be studying the samples taken from Cook Seamount.
They were really magnificent, actually. You know, there was these huge structures that were going like tens to hundreds of meters high. And then on the edges, they were kind of encrusted in many places by this beautiful purple Gorgonian sea fan.
Cook Seamount is an extinct volcano, which means it is not active anymore. It is part of a group of undersea volcanoes known as the Geologist Seamounts that are about 80 million years old and could hold many new animal species. They could also contain elements such as nickel and cobalt that mining companies could extract. One of the other two seamounts studied on their trip was Lo'ihi, an active volcano. Lo'ihi has been studied by manned submersibles over the past 30 years. The scientists saw an old friend at Lo'ihi, a shark they had seen there before. They also saw a 2-meter-long eel and a number of new geological formations around the volcano's crater. Scientists say Lo'ihi could someday be the newest island in the Hawaii chain as volcanic activity pushes the seamount upward. But do not look for it to break the surface of the water anytime soon. Estimates are that it will not be for tens of thousands of years, if ever. I'm Ann Ball.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.